Welcome back to Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Stokely Carmichael's name comes down to us from the civil rights struggle, and even most of us who recognize his name attach it to just part of his thinking and legacy. We may think of the young civil rights activist who spoke in Greenwood, Mississippi on March 12, 1966.
Now, I want to talk to black people across this country. I want to talk to black people across this country. There are four things we have to do. Number one, we have to stop being ashamed of being black. We've got to stop being ashamed of being black. Number two, we have to move into a position where we can define terms for what we want them to be, not what racist white society wants it to be. We have to move to define. We have to move to a position where we can feel strength and unity amongst each other, from Watts to Harlem, where we won't ever be afraid. And the last thing we have to do is to build a power base so strong in this country that will bring them to their knees every time they mess with us.
A few years later, Stokely Carmichael would call out for black power. How his thinking evolved is a fascinating journey, some of which crosses through Maryland. It's all laid out in the comprehensive biography Peniel Joseph published this year, Stokely, A Life. Peniel Joseph is professor of history at Tufts University and founder of the Center for the Study of Race and Democracy there. And he joins us on the line from WGBH in Boston. Welcome to Maryland Morning.
Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on this book. You described Stokely Carmichael's childhood in Trinidad in the 40s and then joining his parents in the Bronx and attending the prestigious Bronx High School of Science. By the time he enrolled at Howard University in Washington in 1960, you write, he was a budding scholar, comfortable moving in various streams of society. How does that show up throughout his whole life? What impact did those early years have?
Well, yeah, the early years are very impactful because he is from Port of Spain, Trinidad. He grows up in an all-black environment in the Caribbean that was part of the sprawling British Empire. He comes to the United States in 1952 and moves to the Bronx. He's one of the only African Americans in a predominantly Italian section of the Bronx. He is one of the only black students at the predominantly Jewish Bronx Science High School. So he becomes very comfortable in diverse settings. So he can go to Harlem, where he listens to black street speakers and Pan-Africanists. He can be around predominantly white, left, liberal crowds, where he goes to people's homes in the Upper East Side. And everyone loves Stokely Carmichael. He really becomes the most popular student out of the class of 1960 at Bronx Science. So those early experiences help him become somebody he's enormously charismatic, but enormously comfortable in any setting.
Summers in college he spent as a freedom rider in the Deep South, but he also got active in protesting segregation in restaurants along Route 40 in Maryland. Tell us about that.
Well, Maryland is a big part of his activism. He's around Howard University and doing activism in Washington, D.C., but both in Cambridge, Maryland with Gloria Richardson and the Route 40 protest in 1961, 62, 63, very, very important, where they're going to small areas and big areas in Maryland, and they're protesting racial segregation in restaurants and in public accommodation. So he's in and around places like Morgan State University, Towson, different universities. He's connecting with those students through SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. So Maryland is one of the sites where he really cuts his organizing teeth in.
And his second, he eventually would be arrested dozens of times. His second arrest was for sitting in a Baltimore restaurant.
Yeah, he's going to be arrested for sitting in a Baltimore restaurant in 1962, I believe. It could be fall of 61. And you know, what's interesting about that is that the Route 40 demonstrations are what students at Howard University are organizing when Malcolm X comes to town in the fall of 1961. So even though students like Stokely, they listen to Malcolm, very much inspired by Malcolm, the activism they're doing is more connected to what Bayard Rustin, the black social democrat, is advocating, which is really interracial alliances, alliances that transcend race and that are promoting radical democracy.
Another Maryland moment, I think you mentioned it, in January 16th, 1967, Carmichael spoke at Morgan State University, and you write that he invoked Frederick Douglass's message about power conceding nothing without demand as a 19th century version of black power. He's already moved by 67 along that course of thought that you were describing.
Oh, absolutely. And he, you know, at that speech, that's a really galvanic address at Morgan State University. He's accompanied by the future Black Panther Minister of Information, Eldridge Cleaver, who's actually shadowing Stokely for a story for Ramparts magazine where Cleaver was a journalist. So that's like one of those really electric moments where Stokely is really speaking before, you know, thousands of students. They're hugely inspired by what he's saying. But he's preaching this radical message that's not just black power, but also against the war in Vietnam. I mean, one of the interesting things about Carmichael is what a huge protester against the war in Vietnam he was. And he's the one who popularizes the term, hell no, we won't go.
You paint a very nuanced picture of Stokely Carmichael's relationship with Martin Luther King Jr. And the war was part of what bonded them, even though many people thought that they actually were not allies. Walk us through that.
Well, they are political allies. What's interesting about Stokely and King and Malcolm is even though he's going to be more identified with Malcolm X as a young firebrand, he actually is closer personally to Martin Luther King Jr. He's met him the first time in 1963. Stokely serves as his chauffeur and bodyguard in Greenwood, Mississippi in 64. Stokely marches with him in Selma in 1965 on the way to Lowndes County, Alabama. And by 66, they're on the Meredith March together and really become close friends once Stokely becomes chairman of SNCC in 1966.
So let me just interrupt a minute to say that the Meredith March was the march for voter registration right across Mississippi after James Meredith started such a march by himself and was shot and injured.
Yes, in 1966. So from June 7th to June 26, 1966, you're going to have hundreds and thousands of civil rights activists going through small towns in the Mississippi Delta and all throughout the state trying to register people to vote and really an act of defiance against racial segregation and also the kind of racial terror that had resulted in Meredith being shot. And that's where Stokely unleashes the phrase Black Power on June 16, 1966. And King is going to disagree with that phrase, black power. He's going to criticize that phrase, but he never publicly criticizes Stokely. They're good friends. Stokely goes to Dr. King's house for dinner in Atlanta. And it's really Stokely's political activism against the Vietnam War that's going to push Dr. King further to the left to come out against the Vietnam War in the spring of 1967.
Let me jump forward. Where was Carmichael when King was assassinated in April 1968?
Well, he was in Washington, D.C. when he hears the news. He's at the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee's offices on 14th Street and U. SCLC offices are right across the street, Southern Christian Leadership Conference, King's organization, and he's hearing reports back and forth. And eventually, once they're confirmed, he's going to lead a group of people down U Street in D.C., the northwest section of D.C., demanding that stores close down in honor of Dr. King's memory.
Let's listen to him at a press conference on April 5th, 68, the day after the assassination.
When white America killed Dr. King last night, she made a whole lot easier for a whole lot of black people today. There no longer needs to be intellectual discussions. Black people know that they have to get guns. White America will live to cry that she killed Dr. King last night. It would have been better if she had killed Rat Brown and or Stokely Carmichael. But when she killed Dr. King, she lost.
So Carmichael is predicting the outbreak of more violence across the nation in retaliation for Dr. King's assassination. Within a few days, I guess, Maryland Governor Spiro Agnew blamed Carmichael for inciting the riots. What role did Carmichael's words play?
Yeah, you know, Carmichael doesn't incite the riots, but what he does, like a lot of black power leaders and as the major black power leader does, is really use the violence as a confirmation of this prediction of race war and this forecast of doom and Armageddon, in the sense that there's hundreds of civil disturbances in the United States between 64 and 68, really that had started in the summer of 63 in Birmingham. What he does is say that this violence is part of an even larger struggle, connect the violence in the United States with what's going on in the third world and anti-colonial struggles, and say that this is just the tip of the iceberg. Now, by doing that, many are going to criticize and say he's fomenting violence.
Why did Carmichael move to Africa in 1968?
Well, he spends his last 30 years in the West African country of Guinea, and he lives in the capital of Conakry and in other places. He leaves for a couple of reasons. One, he is drawn to the Pan-Africanist revolution that's occurring all throughout Africa, anti-colonial struggles. He had visited Africa in 1967 during a 5-month international trip. And so he really thinks that black radicals need to use Africa as their headquarters for a revolution because they have no natural political or land base in the United States. So that's one reason. The other reason is he's under constant surveillance, and there's really the threat of death and political assassination. The FBI, the White House, national and state security intelligence agencies have him under surveillance really from 1966 all the way to the end of his life in 1998. So there's a push-pull factor. He's drawn to Africa, certainly, but he's also pushed out of the United States.
He died relatively young, age 57, of prostate cancer. As you researched all that he did and thought, especially as a young man, were you surprised that he didn't leave a bigger footprint?
Well, I think he did leave a massive footprint. I think once he left the United States, even though he's organizing the All African People's Revolutionary Party, he's doing political organizing, he's coming back to the United States on tours, he sort of recedes in the American and the Western imagination. So I think that when you look at his entire career, the entirety of his career, he actually leaves, I think, a gigantic footprint, but some of that has been lost historically and in our popular imagination because he left the United States, right? And he also wasn't martyred, right? I think if Stokely Carmichael had been martyred at the end of the 60s, we'd be talking about him in the same breath as Malcolm X. But the reason why we don't is because he recedes from the U.S. imagination, and he continues to believe in political revolution long past its expiration date in America and globally.
Thank you so much for your research and for walking us through it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Peniel Joseph is professor of history at Tufts University and author of Stokely, A Life, a biography of Stokely Carmichael. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass. Thank you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.